Hey guys, just a quick one before we get into this episode. I wanted to just talk to you all about a brilliant app that I've been using recently and has really changed my long commutes into work and any spare moments that I have during the day. Now that app and company is called Audible. So Audible is an online audiobook and podcast platform which has a huge variety of incredible audiobooks and podcasts, perfect for any situation and any mood. Honestly guys, there are thousands to choose from. You can literally never run out. I'm currently listening to Barack Obama's book called Barack Obama, which he reads himself in his unbelievably soothing voice. But seriously, guys, it's a fascinating listen. So, guys, here's how you can do it. By entering the link www.audibletrial.com/medtalks or clicking the link in the episode description on whichever platform you're using, you can get a 30-day free trial and listen to Barack Obama's and many other stories. And you can even download these stories and listen offline for no cost at all. And yes, this is a paid advertisement, but that doesn't take anything away from Audible's brilliance. So go on guys, give it a click and open up your ears to the brilliance of Audible. Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Finals Countdown series, which is brought to you by MedTalks. In today's talk, we're still in the gastroenterology section and I'll be covering a condition called viral hepatitis. Now, before we get into the episode, I'd just like to take a moment to talk about the sponsors of this episode, and they are Wesleyan. So Wesleyan is a company that was set up way back in 1841 and they provide tailored financial advice and products to multiple professional groups, including doctors, dentists, and teachers. And I'd like to just touch on Wesleyan's latest project called The Next Step. So The Next Step is born from the Wesleyan tradition of giving back. Built in collaboration with final year students, The Next Step brings together some of the brightest sparks in medicine for live events, workshops, exam resources, content, and podcasts to make the step into F1 a little easier. They address subject matter you didn't know that you needed to know. So go on over and follow them on Instagram by searching at The Wes Next Step, or Facebook by searching The Next Step - Wesleyan, or visit their website, which is thenextstep.wesleyan.co.uk. Okay, now let's get into this episode where we're talking about viral hepatitis. So in the previous episode, we spoke all about autoimmune hepatitis, where the body's immune system starts to attack its own hepatocytes or liver cells. Today, we focus on another type of hepatitis, which occurs due to viral infections. Now, just a quick recap. Hepatitis means inflammation of the liver. There are 5 main documented types of viral hepatitis, and hopefully they go in alphabetical order from A to E. Now, this area of revision is honestly the bane of a medical student's life, trying to remember the different antigens and antibodies, but don't worry, in this talk I will simplify it so that you will never forget it again. Okay, so first things first. Hepatitis A, B and C are the most common causes of viral hepatitis within the UK and the United States. They can all lead to acute illnesses which can present with nausea, abdominal pain, typically in the right upper quadrant in the anatomical location of the liver, fatigue, malaise and jaundice. Hepatitis B and C can lead to chronic hepatitis, and if patients have chronic hepatitis, this can lead to liver cirrhosis, which we have discussed in a previous talk, so go over and check that one out after this one on any of the podcast platforms, and hepatocellular carcinoma, which will be a future talk to come. So it's worth mentioning that the incidence of viral hepatitis has dramatically changed since the 1980s due to the introductions of vaccinations against Hep A and Hep B. Chronic hepatitis may be present, usually secondary to hepatitis B, C or D, and it can present in a varied way. It may even be asymptomatic or cause mild or vague symptoms such as fatigue, and it can take months to decades to develop. Okay, so in the next part of the talk, we're going to go through the individual types of hepatitis and the useful ways to remember them. So, Hep C. Hepatitis C is inflammation of the liver caused by hepatitis C virus. It can cause both acute and chronic hepatitis, and it's a blood-borne virus. Most infection occurs through exposure to blood from unsafe injection practices, unscreened blood transfusions, intravenous drug use, and sexual practices that lead to exposure to blood. Approximately 58 million people have chronic hepatitis C infection, and about there's 1.5 million infections per year. And in 2019, around 290,000 people died from hepatitis C, mainly because of liver cirrhosis and hepatocellular carcinoma. Now, acute hepatitis C is usually not symptomatic and mostly does not lead to life-threatening disease. So the highest burden of disease is in the Eastern Mediterranean and European region. Transmission occurs through the reuse or inadequate sterilization of medical equipment, especially syringes and needles in healthcare settings, transfusion of unscreened blood and blood products, and injecting drug use through sharing of injection equipment. It can go from mother to baby and via sexual practices, so those with people with multiple sexual partners or men that have sexual intercourse with men. But it does not spread through breast milk, food, water, or casual contact, such as hugging, kissing, or sharing of food or drink. In terms of features, well, symptoms are the same as other hepatitis infections, but 80% of people are asymptomatic. The incubation period is between 2 weeks and 6 months. For the diagnosis, now it's often undiagnosed for ages because no symptoms are present until decades after the infection, when symptoms develop secondary to a serious liver insult. There's a two-step diagnosis for hepatitis C. So step one is testing for the anti-hepatitis C virus antibodies. This identifies all of those who have been infected. And step two, so if step one is positive, you do nucleic acid testing for hepatitis C virus RNA. This is needed to confirm chronic infection because about 30% of people who are infected with hep C spontaneously clear the infection by strong immune response. Although they are not infected, they will still have anti-hepatitis C virus antibodies. For treatment, it doesn't always need treatment as the immune system will clear the infection, but in some, then in the chronic cases, treatment is necessary, and this will be antivirals for 12 to 24 weeks. Okay, we'll see that one out, and then we will bring in hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is a viral infection that attacks the liver and can cause acute and chronic disease. It's most commonly transmitted from mother to child during birth and delivery, as well as through contact with blood or other bodily fluids during sexual intercourse with an infected partner, unsafe injections, or exposure to unsterilized sharp instruments. The WHO estimates that 296 million people were living with chronic hepatitis B infection in 2019 and about 1.5 million new infections each year. In 2019, hepatitis B resulted in an estimated 820,000 deaths, mostly from cirrhosis and hepatocellular carcinoma. When people are infected, most do not experience any symptoms, but some people have acute illnesses with symptoms that can last several weeks, so jaundice, dark urine, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. People with acute hepatitis can go on to develop acute liver failure, which can lead to death. And about 1% of people living with hepatitis B are also infected with HIV. Right, so it's not possible, unfortunately, on clinical grounds to differentiate hepatitis B from any other hepatitis. So lab confirmation of the diagnosis is essential. And there's lots of different blood tests, and this is where it starts to get tricky. Now, we will help you to remember the different types of antigens and antibodies in hepatitis B. Okay, so then this can be used to distinguish between acute and chronic infections and previous immunization. So the first marker that appears and suggests acute hepatitis B infection is the hepatitis B surface antigen. So that's the first marker. Okay, so and the hepatitis B surface antigen causes the production of hepatitis B surface antibodies. So, the surface antigen implies acute disease, so present for 1 to 2 months. And if it's present for more than 6 months, then this implies chronic disease. And the anti-hepatitis B surface antibody implies immunity, either through exposure or immunization. It is negative in chronic disease. Okay, so just to remember that, the surface antigen appears first on the surface. So just think about you're staring at the surface of the virus. The surface antigen will come up first. And when that comes up, it suggests that there is acute infection. And it causes production of the surface antibodies. Surface antibodies suggest immunity, either through exposure or immunization. So the surface antibody implies past infection, but not acute infection, and also vaccination. The antibody that's present in the acute infection phase is the anti-hepatitis B C antibody. Stands for core, so the core antibody. So this implies current infection. And there's two types of anti-HBC antibodies. So IgM appears during the acute or recent infection and is present for about 6 months. And then the IgG antibody persists. So the IgM, so immediate, so the M is the immediate. And for the G, you can think of the G as the ongoing infection. The G is the one that persists. But the main ones to focus on are definitely the surface antigen, the core antibody, and the surface antibody. So have another listen to that again if you're still a little bit lost, and hopefully that should clear things up for you. Right, so let's just go through some examples because that can be difficult to remember. For someone who's had previous immunization, so just had a vaccine to the hepatitis B virus, then the only thing that would be positive is the anti-hepatitis B S antibody. So the surface antibody will be positive. Everything else will be negative. So everything else, including the surface antigen, the C antibody, and the E antigen will be negative. If somebody's had previously had hepatitis B more than 6 months ago, and they're not a carrier, so they're surface antigen negative because they're not a carrier, therefore they don't have chronic disease, and there'll be anti-hepatitis B C antibody positive, and that will be the IgG antibody rather than the IgM, because the IgM one is the more immediate one that comes up. If somebody has had previously had hepatitis B but is still a carrier, then there'll be anti-HBC positive and the surface antigen positive as well. So they've got ongoing infection, so more chronic, more than 6 months. Just some other examples. So someone who's susceptible to hepatitis B will basically be negative for everything. So surface antigen negative, surface antibody negative, and the core antibody negative. So if somebody's had a vaccination to hepatitis B, then they'll be surface antigen negative because they've never had the actual virus. They'll be surface antibody positive, and they'll be core antibody negative because, again, they've never had the virus. So if somebody's had past hepatitis B infection but doesn't carry it, they'll be surface antigen negative because they're not carrier. They'll be core antibody and surface antibody positive. And if somebody has active hepatitis B infection, usually this is chronic, they'll be surface antigen positive, they'll be surface antibody negative, and they'll be core antibody positive. And if the IgM core antibody is present, then this will represent acute infection because, again, the IgM is the one that comes up immediately, and then after that the IgG antibody develops. So just to recap on how you tell whether somebody's got an acute infection or chronic infection. Acute infection, they'll be surface antigen positive because that's the one that comes up on the surface first. There'll be IgM anti-HBC, so the core antibody IgM positive. If they've got chronic infection, they'll be surface antigen positive, and they'll be IgG core antibody positive. Okay, so I hope that's helped remember the different types of antibodies and antigens, mainly with hepatitis B virus. So hepatitis A causes inflammation of the liver. It's primarily spread when an uninfected or an unvaccinated person ingests food or water that's contaminated with the feces of an infected person. So it's got a close association with unsafe food or water, inadequate sanitation, poor personal hygiene, and also oral, anal sex, sexual intercourse. So unlike B and C, hepatitis A does not cause chronic liver disease, but it can cause some debilitating symptoms and acute liver failure, which can be fatal. And in 2016, the WHO estimates that 7,134 people died worldwide from hepatitis A. Transmission is primarily through the fecal oral route. This is similar to hepatitis E. So if you look at the word fecal, so the A and the E gives you a clue. So hepatitis A and E are transmitted by the fecal oral route. So an uninfected person ingests food or water that's been contaminated with the feces of an infected person. So this may spread through dirty hands, poor water sanitation, sewage contaminated or inadequately treated water. It can also be transmitted through close physical contact, such as oral anal sexual intercourse with an infectious person, but casual contact does not spread the virus. In terms of symptoms, again, the symptoms are the same as other types of hepatitis. And the adults have signs and symptoms of illness much more often than children. And the severity of disease and fatal outcomes is higher in the older age groups. So, diagnosis. Again, it's not distinguishable from other types of acute viral hepatitis clinically. So, specific diagnosis is made by detection of. So, it's hepatitis A virus specific immunoglobulin antibodies in the blood. And additional tests can include reverse transcriptase PCR to detect the hepatitis A virus RNA. In terms of treatment, there's no specific treatment. Recovery from symptoms may be slow and can take several weeks to months. Hospitalization is unnecessary in the absence of acute liver failure, and the treatment is aimed at maintaining comfort, adequate nutritional balance, so including replacement of fluids that are lost from vomiting and diarrhea. In terms of prevention, well, it's improving sanitation, food safety, and immunization are the most effective ways to combat hepatitis A. So ensuring adequate supplies of safe drinking water, proper disposal of sewage within the communities, personal hygiene practices, so regular hand washing before meals and after going to the bathroom. Now I'm going to talk about hepatitis D. The unique feature of hepatitis D is that it requires hepatitis B for its replication. So you could say that it is dependent on B. Hep D occurs when people become infected with both Hep B and Hep D simultaneously, or get Hep D after being infected with Hep B. And it's those who are more likely to have a co-infection are recipients of hemodialysis, intravenous drug users, patients with hepatitis C or HIV. Now, the global HPV hepatitis B vaccination program since the 1980s has significantly reduced the number of hepatitis D virus. Together, Hep D and Hep B are thought to be the most severe form of chronic viral hepatitis due to a more rapid progression towards liver-related death and hepatocellular carcinoma. In terms of transmission, it's through broken skin, so injections, tattoos, or contact with infected blood or blood products. Features are very similar to other hepatitis, so fever, fatigue, anorexia, nausea, vomiting, and jaundice. Diagnosis is made by detecting high levels of anti-hepatitis B, D virus, IgG and IgM, and also detection of hepatitis D virus RNA in the serum. In terms of treatment, pegylated interferon alpha is recommended treatment for hepatitis D infection, and it should last for about 48 weeks. And this is irrespective of the patient's response. Prevention is through hepatitis B immunization, blood product safety, and avoidance of intravenous drug injections. So, last but not least, I'll cover hepatitis E. Now, in terms of clinical exams, this definitely has less of a role to play within questions. So I'll just briefly summarize it. Hepatitis E is inflammation of the liver caused by the hepatitis E virus. There's approximately 20 million hepatitis E infections worldwide, with about 3.3 million estimated symptomatic cases. It's spread by the fecal-oral route, mainly via contaminated water. And in areas with better sanitation and water supply, the infections are infrequent and more sporadic. And the infections are usually triggered by the virus originating in animals, usually through ingestion of undercooked animal meat, especially pork. It's most common in East and South Asia, but it can be found worldwide. Now, only China have a vaccine to prevent Hep B infection, but nowhere else. So clinical features, the incubation period is 2 to 10 weeks. It may present with a mild fever, anorexia, nausea, and vomiting, and then patients may get abdominal pain. Features of jaundice, so pruritus, dark urine and pale stools, arthralgia, and hepatomegaly. And these are indistinguishable features from other liver illnesses. Chronic hepatitis E occurs in immunosuppressed patients, especially the organ transplant recipients who are on immunosuppressants. So the diagnosis is through detection of anti-hepatitis E IgM antibodies, and you can also do reverse transcriptase PCR testing to detect the Hep E virus RNA in blood and stool. In terms of management, there's no specific treatment. It's usually self-limiting and hospitalization generally is not required. But if patients are immunosuppressed and with chronic hepatitis E, then they may benefit from the antiviral medication ribavirin. For prevention, it's about optimizing public water supplies, disposal systems, good hygiene, and avoiding consumption of water and ice of unknown purity. Okay, so, well, that was a long one, but we've got through it. We've talked about all of the main types of hepatitis virus. So we have gone in a little bit of a funny order going through the different types, but that order is based on how important they are for your exams. And so the one to focus on would be Hep B, and then Hep C and A, and then E, and then D. And we've covered them all in the appropriate amount of detail. I think hepatitis B is the one to focus on because that was the one that will get tested most often in the exams, particularly the surface antigen, the antibodies, and what the positive and negative represents, whether it represents acute infection, chronic, past infection, immunization. So go back over and have another listen to that if you're confused or you just want to revise it again. Thanks so much for listening and for supporting this podcast channel. I really appreciate it. Please remember to give us your feedback. Please share our episodes with your friends, your peers, and anybody else who may find it useful. And get in touch. So message us on Instagram. So our Instagram is medtalks.uk. You can email us. So that's hellomedtalks@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Please feel free to ask any questions. We would love to answer them. And give us some topic suggestions if you'd like. That's all I'll talk about today. In the next talk, we'll be covering non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, so stay tuned for that one. Thanks again, and goodbye.